If success, wealth, and personal fulfillment are your goals, then Bob Proctor is someone you absolutely must get to know. No one has touched my life more and influenced my thinking when it comes to abundance. He just has taken the lid off my thinking. His own breakthrough came about 40 years ago when, by chance, he came across an idea that turned his life around in an instant and sent his income from $4,000 to over $100,000 in just 1 year. Not long after that, he was making millions of dollars. Since then, Bob's been studying the fundamental hows and whys of personal success and helping people around the world how to tap into the unlimited power of their minds to create the results they want. And I can tell you, there are few people I've ever met who can communicate the bedrock principles of success and abundance as simply, as clearly, and with as much long-term impact as Bob. He'll absolutely give you some brand new paradigms to live your life by. You've never thought of wealth. You've never thought of abundance. You've never thought of life the way you will after you listen to Bob Proctor. He's an incredible guy with a truly life-transforming message, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Here's Bob now.
Claim Your Power by Vic Johnson. Do you know that that's something most people never do in their entire life? They really don't. I often mention that 1% of our population earns 96% of all the money that's being earned. Now you have to ask why. It's because they've never claimed their power. They want it. They want to build meaningful relationships. They want to build businesses. They want to take trips. And it never happens. And why is that? Why don't people claim their power? I think there's only one problem. We're going to touch on it this afternoon, and it's ignorance. In fact, I think that's the only problem there is in the world, is ignorance. Just not knowing. Now, I grew up with the idea that if a person was ignorant, they were rude. Well, not everybody's rude, but everyone's ignorant. But if a person was rude, they'd say, she's so ignorant, or he's so ignorant. Well, really, ignorance is not knowing. Like, I'm ignorant when it comes to tuning up a car. I'm ignorant when it comes to baking a pie. And I intend to stay that way. I have absolutely no desire to change it. But there's some things that we should not be ignorant on, and I believe that's it. I was saying to Vic, that's got such a phenomenal title that it's got to be a program. Now, there's an old saying, it's a favorite saying of mine, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. You might want to remember that. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. It's about lifestyle. We get one life. I snuck away about 10:30. I run over to visit with my mother. She's 93, and although she's very wide awake mentally, she is very close to leaving us. And I was sitting talking to her for a few minutes. And we were talking just about how fast life really goes. And I asked her, I said, do you have any regrets? And she thought for a moment and she said, no. Now, she's had a phenomenal life. And she was telling me, there's a friend of hers, Wynn. And she said, I feel really bad for Wynn, because Wynn doesn't have a lot of friends. And she said, I'm a good friend of hers, and I won't be here. So here she is, right near the end of her life, and she's thinking of somebody else. And you know, I think that has been the secret to her living a very full life. And I feel very fortunate that I come from that kind of a gene pool, because that is really the secret. All you have to do is think of somebody else. But we want to make sure that we understand this. We get one trip, one bite at the apple, and it's all in your hands. You decide exactly what's going to happen. There are no exceptions to that. This entire universe operates in a very orderly way. The law is the modus operandi of God. It's how everything's done. It will get dark tonight. That is a given. And it's going to get dark again tomorrow night. Yet it doesn't just get dark on Thursdays and Fridays. It gets dark every night. I remember I was down in New Zealand. We were driving from Takapuna into Auckland with a good friend of mine, Andrew Smith. And Andrew said, the tide's a long ways out. And I said, if it wasn't, you would be really scared. See, the tide always goes out and it always comes in. Everything that happens in your life is by law. Now, if you don't understand the laws, then you're rolling dice with your life. And it probably isn't going to work out too well. If you do understand the laws, you can have a wonderful life. Like I mentioned that I feel often that I feel I live a charmed life. I'll be 72 in a couple of weeks, and I've got more energy than most people, 22. If I take somebody on the road, I usually have to send them home because they can't keep up. Now, why is that? All the power there ever was or ever will be is 100% evenly present in all places at the same time. The energy flows to and through us. And we've got the ability to direct it. We can decide where we're going to go and what we're going to do. Now, on the slide there, it was saying, Vic Johnson taught me how to earn money. Vic was throwing a number of bouquets my way and say, I taught him. I'm going to tell you something. I didn't teach him how to earn money. I think he knows how to earn money. How many are familiar with asamanthinketh.net? That is probably one of the most valuable sites you'll ever tap into. And I want you to look at it from two different points of view. I want you to look at it from one point of view is what's on here that can help me. And I'm going to tell you there's a lot on there that can help you. You can download all kinds of information. You can download As a Man Thinketh. I have been reading it. I've got it in my case. I've been reading that book since 1972. I read it almost every day. I could take it apart. I could teach all kinds of lessons out of it because there's so much in it. It's a thin little book. I think it was Mark Twain said, if I had more time, I'd write you a shorter letter. I believe James Allen must have had an enormous amount of time when he wrote this little book because it is loaded, absolutely loaded. If you want to learn how to earn money, you've got to go to people that know how to earn money. How many have seen this site again? Let me see your hands. How would you like to earn all the money that comes off of it? You'd love that. How would you like that? You could live a pretty good life, couldn't you?
Yes, indeed.
A lot of money flows through that site. How many of you would like to know how to do something like that? How many of you would be prepared to really pay a respectable price to learn how to do that? That's what I thought. Well, I'm going to tell you, that's how I learned how to earn money, and I'm good at it. I am really good at it. Now, I'm not much good at anything else, but I don't want to do anything else, you know? Yet you'll hear people say, well, I'm not really interested in earning money. I just want to do good. I like the way Wallace Wattles puts it in The Science of Getting Rich. He says, you want to do good, get rich first. Well, there's good reason for that. The good you can do without money is confined to your own physical presence. With money, you can extend the good you do far beyond your own physical presence. When I went to bed last night here in Toronto, somebody was getting out of bed over in Asia. And I was earning some money. And when they go to bed in Asia, somebody's getting up here and I'll earn money. I've got it set up so that it doesn't matter where the sun's shining, I'm earning money there. You don't even have to be very brilliant to do this. All you'd have to do is make a decision. It's a simple thing to do. See, most of us grow up with the idea if you're going to earn a lot of money, you've got to be really smart. That's not true. That is definitely not true. I was earning over $1 million a year, and I wasn't very smart. I hadn't gone to school. I had 2 months high school. I had no business experience, and my income took off like a rocket. That's why I'm here today. I was so fascinated with what happened, I had to find out why. No, it's true. Just see, I knew that you didn't have to be very bright to earn a lot of money because I was earning a lot of money. I was raised to believe you had to have a good formal education. I didn't have a good formal education. You know all kinds of absolutely brilliant people who are broke. And there's others who are functionally illiterate. They can neither read nor write, and they're earning millions. How do you account for that? Earning money's got nothing to do with almost everything we've been taught it has to do with. You want to go to As Man Thinketh and just study that site. Because you could be doing that. You could be doing that, but you're not going to do it by accident. You're going to do it by design. I listened to people that knew how to make things happen. Now, I didn't make that decision. Somebody else made that decision, and I just went along with them. I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I had a man tell me, he said, if you read this book is literally falling apart. I've been reading this copy since 1963, and I had one for 2 or 3 years before that. But there's virtually nothing can happen to me that I couldn't find a solution in here. Now, you see, the essence of this book came from research that one man did over an entire lifetime of studying 500 of the world's wealthiest people. Yet he took what he learned and he put it in the science of achievement. And out of the science of achievement came this book, Napoleon Hill's book. I was down speaking at the Napoleon Hill Foundation just a couple of weeks ago. This is incredible information. Now, the man that gave me this, he said, there's a secret in this book. And he said, if you can find the secret in the book, you can have anything you seriously want. Well, I didn't believe that. I was sitting in a fire hall over here in East York. I was earning $4,000 a year and I owed six. I was unhappy, I was sick, and I was broke. I mean, I had absolutely no hope of earning any money. But this guy was so adamant that if I took this book, again, I did exactly what the author said, my whole life would change. I don't know why. I think I probably believed in his belief in me, because I didn't believe in me. I believed in his belief in me, and that's all it took. Yes, boom, almost overnight. Somebody said, well, what were you doing? I don't think it matters what you're doing. What I think matters is how you're doing it. See, in the science of getting rich, Waddell says you don't get rich by doing certain things. You get rich by doing things in a certain way. You give me two people that are doing exactly the same thing. Neither one of them earning any money. I could just work with the one for maybe a week, and I guarantee you, his income would go like a rocket. They're not doing it in a certain way. What way? By law. If you don't ask, you don't get. We've been taught that. Well, I started to study this, and that's 45 years ago. Around 38 years ago, I started to teach it. There's a few things that I want you to really pay attention to as we get into it, because I'm not just going to tell you what to do, I'm going to tell you why you should do it. And I'm going to help you understand why you're not doing what you already know how to do. And I want you to think about that for a moment. I went to work, we were talking about the Prudential. Well, when I went to work for them, they had never had one person write $5 million worth of business in a year. Not one. Yet at that time, the company was 98 years old. I stood in front of 450 of their agents. This was way back in the early 70s in Chicago. And I said, anyone in this room can go out and write $5 million this year. And when I said that, I lost the whole audience. Their bodies stayed, but they left. At the coffee break, this guy come up to me and he says, Proctor, have you ever sold insurance? And I said, no, I never have. He said, I didn't think so. And I said, why are you saying that? He says, you don't know what you're talking about. And I said, hold on a second. I do and I know what I'm talking about. I said, your problem is you don't know what you're talking about. He said, you said anybody in that room could go out and write $5 million worth of business. He said, you know, no one's ever written $5 million worth of business in a year, and the company's going to be 100 years old next year. Well, I said, then you could be the first. He said, you said we could do it this year. The year's over half gone. It's August. Well, I said, then it won't take you as long to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, that man's name was Don Sloven. Second week in December, he had $5,200,000 worth of business on the books. He closed a little better than $6 million. We took Prudential, the number one company in the world in that industry at the time. Yet their sales went up by hundreds of millions of dollars. And you know what I was doing? I was just getting the people to do what they already knew how to do. Everybody knows how to do better than they're doing. Our problem is we don't know why we're not doing it. See, when I read that book, I decided I wanted to earn some money. And I didn't know how to earn money. I had never thought of earning money. I was thinking of debt. Some of you people have a goal of getting out of debt. Do you know that's the worst goal in the world? It is. Every great leader, as far back as you can go, all the religious leaders, all the philosophers, they have all said exactly the same thing on this one point, that we become what we think about. They've disagreed in virtually everything else, but that one point. Well, if you're thinking of getting out of debt, you're thinking debt. You say, but getting out, I don't care if it's get out or get in. If you're thinking debt, you're going to attract debt. Yeah, that's what I'd been thinking about, and that got me thinking of earning money. So I set a goal of having $25,000. Now, I mean, we would have had to sell a fire truck to come up with that kind of money. Nobody had any money, the people I hung around with. But he said, keep reading the card. I had written on a card by New Year's Day of 1970. I gave myself a decade to do this. I really didn't believe it was going to happen. But you know something? If you read a lie often enough, you're going to start to believe it. That's right. You will. A year later, I was earning $175,000 a year. Somebody said, what were you doing? I was cleaning offices. I thought the answer was clean more offices. I had one office to clean. Then I got two. Then I got four. I was only earning $400 a month on the fire department. Pretty soon I was earning an extra $800, an extra $1,000, an extra $2,000. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I mean, I thought I was rich. And I woke up. I was laying on the street at Spruce Hill Road and Queen Street in front of Dr. Found's office. I guess he's long gone now, but there was a crowd of people around me. And all of a sudden I got scared because this crowd of people was there. And I saw a great big cop standing over me. Then I see these lights flashing all around me. Then I saw a couple of ambulance attendants. I guess I passed out on the street. I passed out from exhaustion and I was 27 years old. And something inside says, this isn't normal, Bob. Let me read you something. He said, if you are one of those people who believe that hard work and honesty alone will bring riches, perish the thought, it's not true. He says, riches, when they come in huge quantities, are never the result of hard work. He says, riches come, if they come at all, in response to definite demands based upon the application of definite principles and not by chance or luck. His mentor, Andrew Carnegie, told him, he said, the accumulation of great fortune calls for power. And power is acquired through highly organized and intelligently directed specialized knowledge. But that knowledge does not necessarily have to be in the possession of the person who accumulates the fortune. I was earning a lot of money, and I wasn't very smart, but I didn't have to be. I could hire smart people. We've got all kinds of educated derelicts wandering the street. You can hire lawyers, accountants, you can hire anybody you want. I just pick up the phone when I want to start a company. I don't know all kinds of companies. And I just phone my business partner in Kansas City and I said, register this. Let's start it. We're going to do this. He has a piece of every company that I start. So I got him working with me, for me. If you work with the people that know what they're doing, then watch them. Most people are watching their next door neighbor who don't know any more than they do. Then they get a little group together after bowling or something, and they brainstorm. Carlyle said he didn't believe in the collective wisdom of individual ignorance. If you're going to win, you want to follow the winners. Go look at As a Man Thinketh. Study that site. That's how he earns money. He thinks. And that's how you'll learn it. We're going to find that this life can be absolutely incredible. When I realized where I was and that I was on the street, I got scared because I thought they were taking me away somewhere. Probably the hospital. I didn't want to go. I finally talked them out of leaving me alone. And I wandered away by myself, and a little voice in my head said, if you can't clean all of them, Bob, don't clean any of them. Now, in today's vernacular, that would be, if you want to win, Bob, you've got to leverage yourself. You're working. Working is the worst way to earn money, Bob. I got all dressed up, and I got other people cleaning offices. Yet in less than 5 years, I was cleaning offices in Toronto, Montreal, Boston, Cleveland, Atlanta, London, England. I just go into a city, boom, like that. I had business in a box. I'd have a big business going in a short period of time. And I've never stopped doing that. I left that business and come into this business. Cleaning was almost incidental to what I was doing. I was finding out what the people wanted. I had the most unlikely cleaners you ever saw in your life. I had bank managers, accountants, lawyers. You know, if I met somebody and they complained about their car, I said, I'll buy you a new car. You want to buy a new car? I'll get you a new car. They said, what do you mean you buy it? I said, get 1 hour a night, 1 hour a night, 5 nights a week. They said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm going to ask you to do something that's neither immoral or illegal. Yeah, if you really want a new car, pick one out, I'll buy it. Yes, somebody complained about their mortgage, I'll pay your mortgage. Then I'd say, I want you to meet me at this address. And they'd say, now stay behind me. Because when I opened a door and I went inside an office, I turned around and I locked the door. And I started cleaning there, and that's where I finished cleaning. I didn't buy the same piece of real estate twice. I went in and out. And I didn't hold the keys. Now I said, if you want to do that, 5 nights a week, I'll buy the car. That's all I have to do? I said, that's it. Now, once I got them cleaning one office, I went over and I said, what are you living in that little house for? You know, in another office just down the street here you could do. You're out here anyway. You see? I was teaching people to develop themselves. It took me 9 years to figure out what I was doing. And then I thought, I want to work with Earl Nightingale because I had been listening to Earl. And so I left that business and I went and moved to Chicago. And I studied Earl Nightingale like a scientist for 5 years. Now, that was the best move I ever made because that exposed me to all kinds of giants. Earl was the most listened to man in the history of the broadcasting industry at that time. So, I mean, some real heavyweights would come in there. And I set a goal of being the vice president of the company. It took me 1 year, 13 months actually, because I didn't want to be the vice president of anything. I just wanted to have an office beside his. And I got to know his secretary. So I found out who was coming in to see him. I found out what books he was ordering, what magazines he subscribed to. And I did the same thing. Earl said, if you want to really improve your life, he said, study great minds. He said, some of it will rub off. As you rub your mind up against greatness, he says, some of it will rub off. If you were to come in my house, I've got a library with about 3,000 books. And I bought a desk and put it in the middle of it. So my mind is surrounded by greatness. And that library, alphabetically ordered by author. I know how to find any book in that room. And I've read them all. Some of them many times. I made up my mind that I was going to dictate how I was going to live. Yet I would invest in it. I would spend tens of thousands. And I'd think nothing of going to the other side of the world just to learn one little lesson. Do you know I could walk by you in the hall and I could tell you just like that whether you operate from the right or left hemisphere of your brain. Like, you operate from both sides. You're an interesting person. You do know that, do you? You do. Like, you'll have difficulty with decisions because there's a part of you that's very impulsive. Do it. And the other side's cutting in and says, wait a minute, Melody, I don't think you should. So it's do it, don't do it. It's going on all the time. You know, buy it. Oh, I shouldn't have bought it. You know, what'd you buy it for? Now, let me tell you on a secret. Because you do operate from both sides, that gives you all kinds of options. You're very good at things that are totally unrelated. And that's true. You see, I know all this about you. Yeah, if I was sitting down with you, I'd be very sensitive to the vibration you're in. Because your energy would tell me whether you're coming from the right or left hemisphere of your brain. Now, if you were coming from the right side, man, I'd really move if I was selling you, because I'd sell you on an emotional level and fast, because you got more ideas flying in there than you can execute. And if you moved over into the left hemisphere of your brain, I'd just slow down. I'd say, I think you should think about this, Melanie. I'd analyze it. And I've done a little research, and I'm going to leave these facts with you. She's going to think, God, I like this guy. You know why? I'm treating her the way she likes to be treated. How did I learn to read you like that? I don't know you. You don't know me. I could walk by you in the hall. Now, I'd never want to try and get you to do something you don't want to do. You see, you operate from both sides, but you're dominantly a left-brain person. Man, are you strong mentally. You know, she wants lots of order around her, but she doesn't necessarily want to create it all herself. So she tells people what to do. They bitch, but they do it. Yeah. Now, you actually have a little bit of a shy side to you, but you keep that well hidden. You should learn to express your feelings because you'll have stomach problems if you keep that up. You know? Mm-hmm. Now, how would I know that? Well, anybody can learn to do that. If I learned to do it, you could learn to do it. See, there's a law called vibration. Okay? And this is a mass of energy that vibrates. And the vibration is controlled by the mind. And as you build images in your mind, it dictates the vibration you're in. And you have an intuitive factor where you can pick up that energy. You can actually photograph the energy leaving the body. Semyon Kerlian, back in the 30s, perfected a form of photography. We call it Kerlian photography after him, Semyon Kerlian. And as you change, as Ken changes the image in his mind, the density and the color of that energy will change. And you can see it. How many think you'd like to learn how to do that? Yeah. Well, listen, if I can do it, you can do it. But you know what you have to do? You have to study. And you know what it costs you to study? Time and money. I was telling somebody they should go to the Science of Getting Rich seminar. He says, where is it? And I said, well, there's one in London the first week in June, and there's one in Los Angeles the second week. Oh, that's a long ways away. I have people right here in Toronto say, do you ever run a seminar in the east end of the city? And I say, never. Young people don't even want to drive across town. Let me tell you what Vic's about and about his organization. It's about leaders developing leaders. That's really what it is. And you want to know something? You've all got leadership within you. Yet it's a matter of bringing it to the surface. You see, what we really want to do is understand who we are. Creating rather than competing. Amateurs compete. Pros create. The pro never wonders about, well, what if they take what I've got? Well, then I'll make more. You know how the competitive world works? I want you to imagine you've got a pie. And there's four or five of us, and we're going to eat the pie. So we get the pie all cut up into pieces. Now, if it's particularly good pie, I may think, I'd like more pie. If I'm going to get more pie, you're going to have to get less. I'm going to have to get part of your piece of pie. That's the way corporations work. They compete. I'm going to have to out-market, out-wit, out-sell, out-advertise you. I'm saying, why would you want to do that? Help your competition. The only competition we have is ignorance. You know what to do? Make a bigger pie. The best way to do anything's never been thought of. We're dealing with an infinite source of supply. When you're dealing with infinite, you can never take more than your share. There is an infinite supply. Well, let's start creating rather than competing. Do you know that we're creative beings? We were created in God's image. We're here to do God's work. Now you say, well, I'm not really into religion. Well, neither am I. But I am awake. You know, it's like the guy said to Buddha one time. He said, are you a saint? He said, no. Are you a god? He said, no. Well, he said, what are you? He said, I'm awake. Now, you say, well, wait a minute. What's God's work? God's work is creation. God's the creator. If God's the creator and you're here to do God's work, what do you have to do? You have to create. That's why you're given creative faculties. You know what he said in that book? He said an educated person isn't necessarily a person with an abundance of general or specialized knowledge. An educated person is a person who has so developed the faculties of their mind that they can acquire anything they want or its equivalent without violating rights of others. I was doing a seminar in London, Ontario, many, many years ago, with 2,000 school teachers. Not one could tell me what the faculties of our mind were. I just demonstrated one. It's intuition. You'll say, a woman's intuition? What do you mean, women's intuition? People. It's a mental faculty. It's a mental muscle. Intuition to the mind is like sight or hearing is to the body. Your physical senses just put you in touch with your outside world. That isn't where it happens. Your outside world just demonstrates to you what's going on your inside world. If you want to make it happen, you've got to go inside. You've got to live inside out. Sounds backwards, doesn't it? But it's not. You've got to work with your higher faculties. How can you learn this? Well, I teach it. You know, I'll take you into a coaching program. I'll work with you for an entire year. At the end of the year, you're going to need a telescope to look back where you were. You think I'm kidding? I am very serious. Yes, see, I not only experienced phenomenal change, I found out what I did. And what I did was so totally illogical relative to our paradigm that I honestly believe I must have been guided. Because what I did, very few people ever do. And everybody thought I was crazy. I was even wondering myself. All right? Now look, let's talk about developing a creative edge. Having a creative edge separates a person from the masses. I love the way Nightingale put it. He said, you know, the opposite of courage is not cowardness. The opposite of courage is conformity. Yes, just going along with the crowd. You don't want to stand out. What would your neighbors think? Well, I found out they don't. I remember one time Earl said if the average person said what they were thinking, they would be speechless. It's true. Dr. Ken McFarland, he one time said 2% of the people think, 3% think. They think 95% would actually rather die than think. How many of you work out, exercise on a regular basis? Stand up. I want the people that are sitting to give them a hand. All right, I'm going to ask you to sit down. Now, I want all the rest to stand up for a minute. All the rest, come on, stand up. Don't be shy. How many of you know where to get a body transplant? Well, then you better start working out, because the one that's standing there with you is the only one you're going to get. You see, this isn't you. This is not you. This is your body, and you're not a body. Okay, you can sit down now. I remember Ray Stanford saying to me, who are you? I thought it was a dumb question. He said, what do you mean? I'm Bob. He said, you're not Bob. I said, I'm not. And he had pointed out to me that I was unhappy, sick, and broken. Then I found out I was lost. And he said, Bob and Proctor are just two words. He says, your name, but it's not you. Well, I said, then this is me. No, he said, that's not you. Did you ever hear anybody phone in and say, body's not coming in today, it's sick. Have you ever heard anyone say, am leg? It's my leg, my hand, my head. Who gets headaches? Let me see. Come on, get honest. Who gets headaches? How many enjoy them? What the hell are you aching it for? It's your head. You made it ache. You can make it stop. Say, what? Well, yes, it's your head. You're not a head. You have a head. Yet you make it ache. I remember one time I was doing a seminar down in Houston. Jerry Robert and I were there doing it. For the longest time, I was trying to remember who was with me when this happened, because I kept thinking about it. And one day, Jerry brought it up here just recently. We were doing a seminar and in a ballroom, and we finished around 4 o'clock. Well, there was a wedding starting up in the next one of the adjoining ballrooms. Yet we were leaving. We went into the little gift shop, smoke shop, off the lobby of the hotel. And there's this young lady in there who was a bridesmaid, you know, she had all the jazz on, and she was there with her mother. And this young girl comes in, she says, do you have any aspirins or anything for a headache? And I said, what do you mean you're having a headache? You're not taking drugs for a headache. I said, get rid of that headache. And I said, come here. And an authoritative voice right to her subconscious, she just walked over. And I took her head, and I squeezed in the front and back, really fair amount of pressure for 12 seconds, then went sideways for 12 seconds, and I said, there, your headache's gone. She says, my God, it is. You see? And we left right away. I didn't even get what I went in for. And we just left. Now, do you know something? She'd be wondering who that masked man was. And I'll lay you odds, she's still telling people about this guy that just come over and really, like that, just put his hands on. And she says, he had magic hands. I read about people like that in the Bible. Now, do you know what I did? I just squeezed her head, pushed the excess blood back down into the body. Do you know why the head's aching? There's too much blood up there. The brain is the greediest part of the body when it comes to blood. And you get tense and it pulls up and it goes boom, 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 boom. And I just squeezed the head, just a fair amount of pressure, front and back and sideways, 12 seconds each side, and I pushed it back down. The second blood's gone, the head stops aching. I never told her that. I just left. But you make your head ache. And you don't have to. You see, we can change all these things. But let's not follow the masses. Let's be different. Not for the sake of being different, but because we are. Do you know that you're unique? There is no one in the whole universe like you. You are a necessary part of the whole scheme of things. Do you know that nothing, none of the planets, the stars, nothing would move in the exact order it moves in your absence? And then you say, it's just me. Do you know that we have known since the 50s that there's about 11 million kilowatt hours per pound potential energy locked up in the electrons in the atoms of your body? Then you say, I haven't got any energy. What are you talking about? What's our problem? We don't know. And we don't know we don't know. Now that's being in bad shape when you don't know and you don't know you don't know. The creative edge enables a person to navigate through life. They know when to stop talking and listen. And listen inside. That's where the intuitive factor works. The sound of God evolves through the law of vibration. And you're getting messages. Do this, do that. Do you know, I can sit with people and I can pretty quickly analyze exactly what they know and what they don't know. And I can show them how to earn literally millions of dollars. Now, won't do it. Why? Because they don't know what they know. We put ourselves down. A creative edge enables a person to distinguish between impulses and fears and intuition. No matter what our achievements might be, we think well of ourselves only in rare moments. We need people to bear witness against our inner judge who keeps book on our shortcomings and transgressions. We need people to convince us that we are not as bad as we think we are. I had the very good fortune of working with that man in 1970 at the Human Resource Congress in Chicago. Eric Hoffer was a giant of a man that never, ever darkened a schoolroom. But I'm going to tell you, he had one of the most magnificently developed minds you'll ever find. I would recommend if you read to go and buy a book called The True Believer. It's a little book written by Eric Hoffer. It is a classic. No matter what our achievements might be, we think well of ourselves only in rare moments. Why would we do that? We definitely need people. This is why masterminding is so important. This is why it's so important that we choose the people we associate with. I am very selective about the people that I spend a lot of time with. Some people may think I'm a snob. I'm not a snob at all. I'm actually a very nice person. Didn't used to be, but I am. I just don't choose to spend a lot of time with people that want to bitch and gripe and moan and complain and talk about the economy and the price of gas. I don't care how much the gas costs. I don't care if they charge 50 bucks a gallon. I live close to the 407. And when they built that, because I fly to work, I'm thinking, man, that's my highway. Again, hardly anybody was on it. They said it's a toll road. I didn't care if they charged 50 bucks to put the rubber on that highway. I knew I could get to the airport in about 20 minutes. Why are people the way they are with money? Because they think there's a limited supply. They don't know they can have all they want. I remember Ray saying to me, he said, Bob, this stuff can't talk, but it can hear it. And if you call it, it'll come. So I'm saying, come on.